Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so, for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode, I'll be discussing The Red Thread. The Red Thread is a prose poem I published with Bellevue Literary Review in 2016. So, I've alluded in some of the previous podcasts to a class I took with Jennifer Richter on hybrid forms, particularly in poetry and kind of reading work by poets such as Gary Young, Matea Harvey, and Maggie Nelson, and a number of others. And that led me to kind of this renaissance in my writing of trying to write poetry again. I'd kind of written myself off as someone who was a prose writer and, you know, was kind of intimidated by just the prospect of the things that poems needed to do, and recognized that it wasn't something that I kind of intuitively knew and hadn't really studied to an extent where I felt comfortable, you know, really pursuing it. And this class really kind of turned me around, specifically in thinking about prose poems and, you know, again, kind of hybrid forms where it's a poem but doesn't have these line breaks, and this idea, you know, of what a poem could do in terms of just kind of capturing a specific moment as opposed to, you know, being concerned with telling a whole story and all of the kind of scene setting and kind of plot elements and character in the same way that fiction would, or even essay writing. So I had this project, you know, I've referenced before, that the January after that, January 2016, I sat down and I made it a goal to write at least one poem a day. And that was a really, you know, productive kind of exercise for me, you know, both in terms of just kind of churning out material, but also just kind of figuring out, you know, how to write these poems on my own, and kind of, you know, generating content and kind of not letting myself worry too much about whether, you know, this were appropriate content or whatnot, or if this was, you know, worthy of a poem, and just kind of writing it. And then, you know, some of the pieces did get kind of, you know, tossed by the wayside, but a number of them, you know, I felt good about, started sending out. This poem, The Red Thread, actually came a fair bit after that stretch and doing that exercise of writing a poem a day for that month. You know, I'd kind of gone through that, and then I was thinking about, you know, less in terms of quantity and more in terms of quality of poem, and thinking about, you know, what else I might write about. And there was this prompt that we'd engaged in that class that I really enjoyed. It was based on Maggie Nelson's book Bluettes, which, you know, in and of itself is a hybrid work. I think Nelson herself calls it a book-length essay, and I think that's a fair, you know, way to call it, is kind of a collage essay that is of book length. But, you know, some people look at it as a really long poem, and I think that's not entirely off base either. So in the class, we had a prompt kind of based on that where, you know, in Bluettes, Maggie Nelson really focuses on the color blue, as you might guess from the title. And, you know, in the class, I wrote my own kind of ode to blue in a prose poem called Sea Level. You know, and coming out of the class, that was actually the very first piece that I accepted for publication, and one of the poems that kind of helped me feel like I really could pursue this. And, you know, so I wrote a poem centered on the color yellow and kind of followed you know, basically the same rules of the prompt, where it was a lot of it was kind of pulling from or emulating some of what Nelson had done with the color blue in terms of pulling on, you know, memories of the color and first encounters with it and, you know, things we remembered that were of that color, or, you know, things in nature were that color. So you know, I wrote a couple of poems, wrote that poem Sea Level in the class. I wrote the poem Bucket afterwards, and on the color yellow, where I really got into more of my racial identity and kind of thinking about that. And then I started thinking about the color red, and I took a lot more liberties with the prompt on this go round. I held on to that prompt and kept it handy because I felt like it was such a fruitful thing for me. But as I was working on this one, I started to find it a little bit more constraining than useful. Like I think any good prompt, you know, it's useful to the extent that it, you know, helps you in generating material and kind of making you think in different ways. But there also comes a point where, you know, I think it's almost a good thing that you outgrow a prompt, where you've kind of exhausted, you know, what you can get out of it, and you still take the remnants of what are the useful pieces to you, and keep working with that. So I started thinking about all of these connections between the color red and my background, and again, it came back largely to my being half Chinese. You know, and I thought of red, you know, there were two central kind of pieces of it that kind of tied together for me. One was just this knowledge that red was a lucky color in Chinese culture. My dad, you know, didn't really raise me with very much of the culture that he came from. I don't think that he was really brought up with a ton of it, but had always mentioned that red was a lucky color, and I know that he wore a red shirt a lot when he gambled, so you know, that always stuck out to me. And then as a secondary piece, there was this concept of the Asian flush, which, for those not familiar, it's a thing that happens to a fairly large percentage of people of an East Asian background, where when we drink alcohol, our skin turns red. And it's something that is, you know, a relatively common phenomenon. I know both my sister and I have it in pretty pronounced ways, where, you know, long before I'm drunk, because I think when people, you know, are really drunk, you know, that's not so uncommon to turn a little bit red. But, you know, I can just have a couple sips of a beer and I start to turn red. You know, and I'll talk a little more about that as we go on. But, you know, I started to research based on just these two pieces of, you know, these kind of, you know, almost contradictory pieces in a way of, you know, red being something lucky and then red also being something that, you know, makes me stand out in a way that I never really appreciated. And looking at kind of other, you know, connections with the color red, and, you know, found out about the red thread, which I'd been vaguely familiar with before, but hadn't really, you know, meaningfully looked into before. But it's this idea in Chinese culture that all people are kind of connected by this red thread around our ankles, and it kind of guides our destiny. So, you know, there's all these kind of pieces. I thought that was a really interesting one, just to tie in another kind of central theme of the color red and tied in with, you know, the same kind of thread of heritage. So I started writing this poem riffing off all of that and discovered how many connections a color can have, and how it can not only tie together these ideas that start out seeming really separate, but also inspired me to think about different angles related to the color. You know, and I think that's kind of like one of the indicators that you're really onto something in terms of a central image or a central idea in a poem, or, you know, also in an essay or a story, I think. But just this idea that, you know, both it gives you material to write about and then also kind of changes the way you think and then leads you to think about totally other things. So both tying together ideas you already had and then leading to other ideas as well. So I was really happy with this poem once I had it written, you know, and I thought about some more over time and revised over a period of a couple months, and then started sending it out. And I had a few close calls of, you know, some personalized rejections, but then a lot of also just kind of form rejections from it. Before I saw a call for submissions from the Bellevue Literary Review. This was a journal I was aware of. It kind of, you know, slipped from my consciousness, but I remember that my friend Hannah had actually won a contest put on by this magazine previously, and for her, one of her really, really great poems, and that she was writing a lot about kind of medical issues at the time. And that's kind of what this magazine focuses on. It's all about kind of medical issues and health and healing, you know, not sort of in a prescriptive way so much as, you know, art that kind of speaks to these topics in one way or another. You know, and in thinking about Asian Flush, and one of the things I discovered about it, years after I, you know, first had my first sips of alcohol and first discovered this, result that I would turn red, was that it's actually an indicator of a pretty serious health risk, due to, I'm probably going to butcher the biochemistry here, but I believe it's an enzyme deficiency that a number of people of East Asian descent have, where we can't kind of process alcohol, you know, the way that we should to kind of, you know, properly take care of it in our system. And so that Asian flush is actually a signifier from our bodies that we're at risk. It's a signifier. They say that there's a relatively high risk of esophageal cancer related to it, especially if someone with that issue drinks a lot. It's something that I've often thought about in terms of my own drinking behavior. I've never been that big of a drinker, regardless. But this idea that the only real way around the risks is just to not drink at all, but you can moderate the risk, and sort of if you drink, I think it's something like, less than an average of a drink a day, you're significantly less risk than someone who drinks, on average, multiple drinks a day. So that's one of those things I've always kind of kept in mind. But it is a lingering kind of specter, in my life, something that I've thought about. And it was already a part of the poem, and I decided to write into that a little bit more. It became a little bit more prominent in the poem, and turned out to be a fit for the Bellevue Literary Review, and I was really happy about that. It seemed like a good home for that poem, and a place where it was kind of appreciated and fit with the content, and, with a magazine I really respect. So as has been the custom with a lot of the poems I've addressed on this podcast, I thought I'd go ahead and just read the whole poem here. So, this is called The Red Thread. Traditionally, the Chinese people discuss the red thread in terms of destiny. We are born with this thread tied to our ankles, and it connects one of us to another. Immune to decay or cutting, it is our destiny. I find something equal parts horrifying and comforting in the red thread's inescapable properties. It's a lifeline and a leash, spider web and a hammock, rescue rope and noose. Red also represents good luck. It colors lanterns for Chinese New Year and envelopes of money gifted to children. My father wore his red shirt to the casino floor. My skin turns bright red after a few sips of alcohol. My father noticed it at a barbecue after half a beer. He said it was good, that he would always be able to tell if I'd been drinking. I researched it years later, this Asian flush. All signs pointed to an enzyme irregularity present in about one-third of Asian people who cannot metabolize alcohol properly. More than a party trick, it's the body's warning sign that each drink increases my chance of esophageal cancer. When I see red, I think of danger. Not just cancer, but the flashing lights of fire trucks and of police cars. Code red. The red ink from my 9th grade English teacher's pen. Red like stop signs, like red lights. How did red come to mean stop and green go? Green is the complement of red, not only in traffic lights, but on the color wheel, and in evergreen conifers, beside Santa's suit, holly tied with ribbons. Red, like blood. Is my fear of red instinctual, or rooted in 30 years of indoctrination? Might my Chinese ancestors see blood, their very insides, differently? Not as a sign of injury and dying by degrees, but a glimpse at the wonder within themselves. All right, so that was the poem, The Red Thread, and that's kind of a wrap on that poem for me. So now we're going to switch gears to Mike's monthly endorsement. So as an artist, I do feel it's important to be consuming other things, to see what interests and inspires you, to see what's already out there and see what's come before you. So at the end of episodes, I'm recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, band, wrestling match, etc. That may have escaped a huge mainstream audience, or that may be a little dated now and at the cusp of being forgotten, but that I recommend. So this month, I'm sticking with the theme of poetry and also kind of the theme of my experience in my MFA program at Oregon State. I'm going to recommend a poem by a poet I knew there named Ellie Douglas. So the poem is called If There Is Anything, and it's a really wonderful poem. Ellie was writing a lot about loss and particularly about her father. And this poem, it's a really simple, really short poem. This kind of is just talking about if there is anything, kind of where her father is at the time of the poem. what she would hope that there is, and just kind of these simple wishes that are, you know, nothing extravagant, you know, that don't really delve into spirituality in a meaningful way, but the more capture kind of the person who is lost as an individual. And I always think that that's you know, one of those lessons that writers learn pretty early on, I think, but it can be hard to remember sometimes or really internalize, just this idea that sometimes you know, capturing specifics is the best way to be universal, to kind of access a lot of people. Because when you speak in generalities, I think the temptation is for people to kind of disconnect. You know, I think that there's, you know, kind of a more superficial read on that. I know that, you know, people in reading the Twilight series have kind of commented on how, you know, part of the appeal of it to a general audience is that there are so little details, especially on the protagonist, that anyone can kind of paint themselves onto that character. And forgive me, I've not read those books or seen the movie, so I'm only speaking, you know, kind of secondhand in my understanding of that. But in any event, I think the details of this poem really kind of draw you in, kind of draw you into the personal connection there, where, you know, even if, for example, you know, you don't know someone who loved chocolate cake or are missing someone who loved chocolate cake, that's one of the central, you know, points in the poem. You can think of someone who loves something like that, and that specificity, I think, kind of carries the day on that. So, again, the poem is called If There Is Anything by Ellie Douglas. It's in a great journal, the Missouri Review, and the whole text is actually available for free online, so you can definitely, you know, check that out. I really recommend that one. Just kind of Google Ellie Douglas, If There Is Anything, and you should be able to find it pretty easily. Okay, well, thanks for listening to this episode of the show. I want to give, as always, a special thanks to Mike Peake for providing the theme music for the show. That's all for this time. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.